So we're now recording, and for those of you who are familiar with what we do, Marianne and I write a monthly column about leadership in Psychology Today. And in July, we wrote a piece on rogue waves that might destroy your career. A rogue wave is when you have the collision of two waves coming together at different angles to create a much larger wave that could just destroy a ship in a matter of minutes. Jonathan Brill has written about rogue waves, and one of the things I hope he does in our discussion is describe the difference between a rogue wave and a black swan. Jonathan had this great title, Global Futurist, for Hewlett-Packard. What a great title. Jonathan is the author of Rogue Wave, which is actually coming out in a couple of days. And he is on the board of directors of Frost & Sullivan, which is a global market intelligence firm. Jonathan works with organizations to build resilient growth strategies and improve their innovation pipeline. Jonathan's clients include HP, JP Morgan, Samsung, LG, Microsoft, Verizon, Korn Ferry, the MIT Media Lab, and the United States government. So Jonathan, I'm going to give it over to you. And we have four different groups, and you might want to just go through the groups and find out what did they decide on the case and then take off from there. Jonathan?
Sounds fantastic. So we have a couple of different groups, and Robert Johnson's heading up ours, but I'd love to go around the horn and hear what other people thought of this case. What was interesting, and where did you come to?
Why don't we start with group one? Let's see, group one had Barry, Jonathan, Mark, Robert, and Robin.
So that's Rob Johnson.
Okay. It's me. Hey, Rob Johnson, go for it.
Okay, thanks. A few things. We believe we need some education as a board. We are not prepared to establish a separate risk committee, but we do believe that this probably fits more into current audit committee activities. We want to task management with establishing a risk management report out, kind of where are we, where do we prioritize risk, cyber versus construction related risk versus 100 year floods that are not happening in 20 years, some of that type of thing, and get this more on our radar. In general, we were a little bit worried that this company wasn't paying very much attention to risk, and was reluctant to, and the fact that we're the board is dominated by PE folks who are looking for an exit as lucrative as quickly as possible at minimum cost gave us some concern. So other members of the team, please correct me if I've misspoke or you have something to add.
If I don't hear him already, let's go to team two, which is Anna, George, John, Peter, and Phil.
Okay, I'm reporting for team two. We had a good discussion. I'll try to hit the high points. I think we talked about a lot of things. I think where we came out is that the first responsibility for risk, including cyber and all the other mentioned in the case, lies with management and not with the board. So we didn't like the idea that Brenda suggesting that the board should do it and the management people would attend the meeting. That was a non-starter. So we felt that Brenda as CEO and the management people need to address risk, that they probably need to do some type of assessment, you know, or inventory and figure out what all their risks are and who's looking at them and who should be looking at them. You know, we talked about the various risks that were mentioned in the case and whether or not they should do or should have a CISO, whether or not they have a business continuity plan, process, and would those things encompass the oversight of cyber risk? And if they don't have them, how should they get there? So, they ended up with that, the board could hire, the management company could hire consultants and experts to help them, get their arms around this, to develop a plan that then could be presented to the board. The board likewise could hire experts to help them, guide them in what questions to ask. We talked about whether or not the board would want to try to attract a cyber expert, and that's probably pretty challenging to do because, most of them are working in the industry. They're not, they may not be available to be on boards, and you get too much into the question of whether you have a board comprised of a lot of people with narrow expertise as opposed to broad. So we thought the board should educate themselves on the right questions to ask. And we also talked a little bit about whether the private equity firm, could bring some expertise in terms of hiring people and then make them available to this company and others in its other portfolio companies, as opposed to Fred saying, well, if I do it for this one, then I have to do it for all the others. That maybe there is some way to bring that expertise and leverage it. And that got us in a little bit of discussion of whether or not the board itself, we don't know a lot about the other five or four members, but they're all with the private equity firm. And some of the conversation in the case seemed to indicate that, the private equity board members might be acting more like members of management than exercising governance over the management people. And finally, we did talk about risk committee versus audit committee. And we didn't come down with a conclusion other that, other than the audit committee chair who's interested in this and brought it up, whether or not audit committee members would have any special knowledge or expertise that, means they are better suited to this, and versus whether or not it should be a full board responsibility because of its importance.
Thank you. Team three is Christine, Jim, Mark Powers, Marianne, and Susan.
Larry, I've been tasked with this. So we also had a very interesting and robust discussion. We hit on several of the same points that the other groups discussed. All of us agreed this is a huge issue, that the current board was mismanaging the situation, and we were concerned about the lack of independent directors. So like others, we know that the board needs to either educate itself on this issue better or hire the necessary experts to advise them on these issues. One thing they probably need to do is reach out to their insurance agent and take a look at whether there are the availability of cybersecurity policies. Typically, the standard CGL policy will not cover cyber risk. We also talked about the fact that this company probably confronts an array of different types of risks, including supply chain risks, potentially automation, unionization issues. But circling back to the cyber issue, we thought about contacting our external auditors, perhaps for advice or recommendations on outside help. And we agreed that we have to have a robust internal IT group. And from the perspective of cybersecurity issues, really your weakest link is your employee who is uneducated about cyber issues. So many cyber events are self-inflicted, and having a robust internal training program is important. And it would be the board's responsibility to try to help implement that and make sure that it's followed. I don't think we came to a conclusion, and others can correct me, on whether we should have a special committee. I think we said no on that, but we didn't really focus on that particular issue.
Right, we thought it should be a full board. issue or, you know, audit, but the full board should pay attention. The other thing we talked a little bit about was whether the private equity firm would be willing to put in their stead some people that had different expertise on the board, because everybody, there were six members that had private equity financial expertise, and that this company might benefit from some people on the board who had different expertise. And some private equity firms do such a thing, have someone else sit in their own stead, but we didn't know if they'd be willing to do that.
And finally, team four is Craig, Ingrid, Kevin, and Pete.
Okay, last but not least. So a lot of similar themes, so I'll go through them quickly. We all agreed that the cybersecurity risk was something substantial enough that it deserved the attention of both management and the board. I think we agreed that it really, you know, I think Craig reminded us of the nose in, fingers out, posture of the board. So this was really something that management needed to take on. We seem to agree that cyber is one of many business risks, and the CEO kind of raised this fact that there are other risks, and also did so in a way that suggested that they weren't being really discussed much by the board. On the cyber topic, I think we, like others, thought that it would probably pay to bring in outside help. I think the idea of using either your auditor or a boutique firm or an individual consultant would be great. We thought that since this was one of a number of portfolio companies for Heritage, that it might also pay dividends for them to look across their portfolio with the same outside help and methodology. We zeroed in on this topic of, board workload, this multiple comments about the board being overworked. We also zeroed in on this, the heavy loading of the board with Heritage partners, and like other groups, thought that there may be some scope for downsizing their presence and, using those slots to add potentially some specialist expertise or, other outside perspectives. With that quick summary, rest of the team, Ingrid, Craig, Kevin, anything else I missed?
Hearing no comments, why don't we turn it over to Jonathan? What's your perspective in terms of what you've been hearing?
I think it's a constant challenge of who's responsible. And when you take a look at least the SEC proxy filings of the Fortune 50, what you see is a disproportionate response to prior risks, things that have previously happened in the industry, as opposed to future risks. And that's a major concern for me. Because I think that happens at most companies. Companies over-rotate toward the problem they've had and solved, not the problem they will have and won't solve. I think the question, I thought everybody had some good points about what are the priorities of the company. Is it to get sold in 2 years? And I think there's a second question of how much change can you actually do? How much de-risking can you actually do in that time frame? It was kind of interested in that insight. What were your thoughts, Larry?
I thought the basic ideas were good. I think what I was trying to do with the case was sort of trigger discussion about, as we look at risk, do we look backwards or do you look forwards? And I kind of agree with you that too many boards are focused on how do we avoid risks that I've heard of other people having, rather than looking forwards.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's There's a second piece, and we'll talk about this briefly in a moment, which is, you know, I think we misunderstand risk. We think of it as solely a threat, and it's really a measure of change. It's a measure of volatility over of change over time. It's a measure of volatility. And with that comes opportunity. Now, if you take a look at a company like Amazon, they were really well positioned, obviously, for 2020. But I'd ask you about any of your companies. Could they absorb 10 years of growth in 3 months, a year even, if it was given to you? And so there was something profoundly different happening at Amazon than happening at most companies in terms of their ability to take advantage of the change. And so if you believe that we're moving into a more volatile world, I think we need to start thinking about, okay, well, are we ready to pivot to a new game board, to a new set of rules? Because that's going to happen more and more frequently. And so it's kind of the Porter-esque approach of, you know, you kind of have a set of rules and you figure out where the players are and your five forces. That doesn't work when the game board gets thrown out of the, you know, thrown out the window.
Jonathan, I'd like to give an example for a business owner that Marianne and I both know. Marianne and I are married to each other, as most of you know, and our daughter went to college with a woman who eventually became owned a winery in Napa, California. And, you know, guess what? As you all know, you have heat, drought, fires. The result is her winery was not destroyed by fire, but the crops were contaminated by the smoke. Yep. Most of her colleagues said, oh my God, we're a winery, we've got all this, these wines that are, we can't do anything with, and they just destroyed their wineries. She, on the other hand, said, oh my God, we got all these wines that are contaminated by smoke. Let's make brandy. It's the 2021 version of when life hands you lemons, you make lemonade. It's kind of, I mention that because it's kind of easy to think about Amazon. Of course, they are positioned to capitalize on the strength, but she was not positioned to capitalize on fires, and she did, and she's doing it.
Well, I think about, I have some very good friends. They have a family farm in Ohio. They got destroyed in the early 2000s, I'm sorry, in the early 1980s by a combination of inflation, interest rates, and then they got hit by a hailstorm. And they lost their farm, they lost their land, they actually had to sell their family car at auction. And when they rebuilt, they were going to be the most resilient farm on the planet. And they've grown to be one of the two remaining vegetable producers in Ohio. And they serviced 800 restaurants, high-end restaurants around the world. And so they thought, hey, we're globally diversified. We have 600 different crops, you know, so on and so forth. We have a unique service proposition that you can literally, I got a piece of, I flew from there to Hong Kong once, and I had dinner at Joel Robichon's place there. And there was a piece of flaming sorrel on the top of a dish. And I asked where that came from. And they brought out the box from the chef's garden. And it turns out that it came on my flight with me. Right. They'll actually, you can call the night before, they'll custom pick stuff and they'll have it to you in Hong Kong for service the next day. I mean, the place is incredible. But they turned around, they had a good cash position, all of that stuff. They turned around last year and all of a sudden, all 800 of their customers shut. I mean, just kind of imagine that moment. I mean, we all did, but kind of imagine that moment for the second time in your life. And they turned around 5 days later, they were shipping vegetables to consumers. And they actually did more sales or did more volume last year than they did in 2019. So coming into this year, not only do they have a new baseline business, all those 800 restaurants, they're coming back. Yeah, so they're set to double their business as a result of COVID, while most of the vegetable farms are probably having a real hard time. And so this isn't an Amazon, it's them, they've got too much money. It's about how you think about the problem. It's about how you think about resilience. And it wasn't an accident that they had built out this ability to sell to consumer. We've been talking about it for about 5 years. So they had a back of pocket innovation ready to go, even though they hadn't pulled the trigger and done all the investment yet. And so that's what saved their bacon this year.
You guys are muted.
Where do you see the board comes in on this? Because you seem to be talking about culture, corporate culture, corporate values, and what's the who forms corporate culture? What's the role of the board?
I think it's kind of a threefold proposition, which is one, you know, people need contextual awareness of what's going on around them. Otherwise, there's no reason for them to change. They think everything's just fine and it's going to continue to be just fine. So I think part of the role of the board is to make sure that that information, that looking outside of the organization, that at least thinking past the next quarter is happening through the organization. And if you're incentivizing management to hit the quarter, you know, they can't fully do that themselves. You're asking them to do two different things. The second piece is about behavior. If you teach people how to look out at the tsunami that's coming and they don't know what to do about it, you know, they're just going to sit on the beach like chickens, right? Run around like chickens. You got to actually give them the skills to make sense of, become more resilient to, and exploit the change. And yet, as directors, as managers, we've been decreasing investment in learning and development training since the 1980s. You know, we've got to think really carefully about what we're doing, what long-term skills we're training for. And then the third piece was culture, like you said. And I don't know that you can change corporate DNA, but I do think you can use incentives and processes to change what the priorities are. And I think that's part of the secret, is starting to figure out how to create conversations, how to teach people to think about, to communicate about the future that might not be so clear yet, as opposed to the one that's obvious and everyone already agrees to. You know, in 2019, you know, AMC and Zoom both had a really good strategic plan going into the year. At the end of the year, one of them was almost bankrupt and the other one had one of the best years in the history of organizations. So, you know, you can't walk into the future assuming that you know what it's going to be and how you're going to have to react. And if you don't have ways to communicate about it, you have a problem. And so what's the role of the board? The role of the board is making sure that all of that is happening in organizations. And if you're a performance focused company, making sure that that performance focus doesn't make you blind to the future. And so it's kind of that balance, because if you're asking your leadership, you know, to constantly hit the quarter and you're incentivizing them on the quarter, that's what they're going to do.
Ingrid has a question for us.
Yeah, Ingrid? I was just going to more of a comment, just in the sense of that resilience piece and the agility. I think it's an interesting dynamic. There's so many corporations that, to your point, are so, especially given the shakeup of this last year, are so myopically focused on quarter to quarter. And believe me, that is what keeps dividend checks coming in, which is important. But you have to have a segment of the brain trust that is thinking future forward. What is that young punk that's in a garage somewhere out innovating us to be a market disruptor? That somebody in our group, might have been Craig or Kevin or Pete, one of them had talked about that concept of entrepreneurial spirit. You have to have that as a part of your company construct to ensure that you can have that future path forward, or if the unanticipated happens, you are ready to move forward with taking basically whatever that brandy, smoke wine, and change it into a new model for making money to add to your portfolio, as opposed to throwing your hands up and saying, woe is me, we're destroyed. Let me line up into the queue to get a check that says, to help me out for insurance. I think that you have probably, and anybody on this call could feel free to debate it, but I think you probably have much more of a mindset for most organizations that are thinking, dang it, we now what, versus this is the perfect time for us to institute blah, 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 blah. So just a comment.
Can I ask a quick question? Jonathan, we were so fortunate to have you as part of our breakout group. And you know, you sat, you listened to us, and certainly I think it would be fair to say we all came with different opinions. My knee-jerk reaction to begin with was I didn't think that this was an issue that should reside in the audit committee. And I sort of firmly believe that there should be a risk committee. I could be persuaded that in fact, maybe it was management's role. And depending on the organization, whether a risk committee was necessary at this time or not. But you know, you were silent throughout this whole discussion, and I thought that Barry had made an interesting comment towards the end of our discussion regarding contingent liabilities and whether or not maybe this did belong in an audit committee because he saw the risks as potentially a contingent liability that wasn't being reflected on the balance sheet. So I'd love to hear your views.
Well, how many people here are CPAs? Okay, you need to stay. Again, piss some people off. You know, the reality of the audit committee is typically the culture is past looking, not forward looking. And I question whether that's innately the group of people who are going to look at new changes effectively. I look at these things and they don't. My experience in organizations, at least, is that group of people isn't the best group of people to look at this. It's much more of an abductive thinking problem than it is, you know, kind of a deductive thinking problem. And so I don't think it belongs there. I don't think that's where the right skill sets are. My other question about risk is, you know, how do you look at both sides of the coin? And that's the real challenge of a risk committee is what does it do, right? Is it just simply sitting there saying, what's the likelihood of meteors striking? Or is it saying, okay, what are our financial, operational, and strategic positions? How could changes in the external environment impact them? And what would we do next? And is our management giving us plans or competencies that will allow us to take advantage of what happens next? You know, going into 2020, you know, I came out of HP, and going into 2020, something really happened. Carl Icahn and Xerox were trying to take over the company in a fully paid buyout. And HP was fighting it. I looked at that and at the end of the year and I said, this is not a good situation. The money's there. You know, like why wouldn't investors sell? COVID hit and something really interesting happened. These are companies that are theoretically close to peer competitors. HP's revenue and its earnings per share were stable through 2020, whereas Xerox has dropped 69% by GAAP or 60% if you modify it. So the same two companies or companies that operate in very similar ways can have very different outcomes depending on how you're prepared to go into these kinds of situations, how you're diversified, how you're hedging your bets. And so this was a really, really good year for HP. Part of it because we continued to keep what looked like a dog computer business. But we were able to flip that business at the same time and move it from an 80% business to business business to a much more business consumer and home device friendly business. And the same thing with our printing organizations. And so if you're set up for change, if you're set up to respond to these things, you can actually have a really good year. And I don't know that that's purely a risk question. It's about balancing, or that's risk is threat question, and risk is mitigation question. It's about asking how much more volatile is the world going to get, and what does that mean for the opportunities in front of us?
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to my diatribe.
Larry, I want to group that strikes me, or having worked, you know, running companies that were owned by holding companies or by equity investment companies. This one is genuinely a really tough one. We're talking about what should be, and a lot of good comments and suggestions were made. But you have a CEO that apparently is one of the family that's sold a controlling interest, but presumably still probably a long running, well, it says it was a long running third generation, modest size manufacturing family company, not a company that would have perceived a lot of risk on this front, or in general would have naturally had antenna up for all kinds of other risks. They would have seen their world as pretty contained, I would think. And then you have a private equity come in that's got a fairly short horizon, and that normally means let's control costs and let's worry about growing the top line. Not necessarily a mix that makes it easy to get at this problem. And it seems to me there is, it's disappointing that, to the extent there's some truth in this that you might reveal, that a investing company like this might not actually bring and share some expertise with one of their operating companies. And that there isn't a realization at the chair level that both the board and the management just have to peel off some time to swim in this for a while, because it's a tough problem from where they both come from. Aside from all the ideals and big companies that oftentimes have committees or groups or people that really think outside the box, it's hard to do it in this context.
To insert myself here, because we've got about 9 minutes left. Just following what Kevin said, to push Jonathan's book, Rogue Waves, there is a section in his book about threat and opportunity assessments that would be very valuable for boards. And then Jonathan has a kind of a whole section about maybe about five key waves that are coming our way. And the case mentioned happened to one of those waves, which is the increasing emergence of China as a major economic power. Are we going to ignore it, or are we going to deal with it? But again, I would definitely recommend Jonathan's book.
We can't actually see the book.
Oh, okay. I hope we can see it now.
Sort of. It's ethereal.
I'll share my screen here.
You take my word for it. It does there. Exist, right?
There it is.
There we go. Much better.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah.
Sure. And I'm always glad to chat with any of you. This is always a fascinating conversation, and I'm continuing to learn more about boards and how they operate, and always glad to have these conversations. So feel free to reach out. It's jonathan@jonathanbrill.com.
Yeah, that's jonathan@jonathanbrill.com. And again, I just would like to mention that we will not have a seat at the table program in August, but we will commence again in September, and our focus is going to be on executive compensation. Anybody have any other ideas, thoughts, perspectives, or anything that anybody in the room could help anybody with before we can adjourn? Hearing none. Well, why don't we say goodbye, and we thank you very much, Jonathan, for your expertise and help. And then we look forward to seeing you all in September. Take care.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. Interesting bye-bye. Discussion. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wonderful discussion.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.